Sometimes in football, you need just a little more for that first down. You need to be pushing the pile. And on our new podcast, we'll give you that extra effort.
I'm Mike Renner, a longtime NFL analyst who helped develop player evaluation systems that every NFL team uses to this day.
And I'm Kyle Long, former all-pro offensive lineman in the NFL who knows a thing or two about getting people moving.
You'll get expertise from inside the trenches and behind the tape for 4 episodes every week. So make sure you download and subscribe to the Pushing the Pile podcast on the Audio.
Such a fun day yesterday at the ballpark. All my worlds collided, you know. I mean, you got college football going on. You got pro football going on upstairs in the Budweiser Terrace with the greatest show on turf in the house. Got to do a Q&A with them. Mike Martz, Ricky Prohl, Mike Jones. Great to see the turnout yesterday for that. Fans were up there roaring and having fun and seeing those guys. And then going downstairs and doing Cardinals pregame. And a big house yesterday, 41,317 to see the Cardinals beat the Guardians 6-5. I know the season is over in terms of the playoffs, but it's not over for Jordan Walker. You know, he needs to get those at-bats. He hits a big home run. Ivan Herrera gets a big opportunity. Those are encouraging moments for them as the Cardinals get their season already started for 2025 and try to figure out what they're doing. Ollie Marmol will be with us at 10:15. John Mozeliak at 11:30. Bernie Miklas is going to chime in on the Cardinals. He's at 10:45 this hour. And, you know, all those worlds colliding just makes for a fun sports day. I was sneaking peeks at the Missouri game, then I was watching it intently. Once our Cardinals pregame ended, I stayed down in the Busch Stadium studio. I had the Cardinals on TV, but I had the Mizzou game on my phone, and I was watching SEC Network on my iPhone, and I mean, boy, did they escape with one yesterday. Gee whiz. I mean, that season is coming to a close, I think, if you lose to Vanderbilt, right? I mean, you get really bumped out of the playoff picture there unless you can pull off a win at A&M or Bama. I think they can beat Oklahoma at home based on what I saw from Oklahoma yesterday losing to Tennessee. But, man, I mean, you can't lose that game. And they find a way to sneak it out. Jeez, I mean, 30-27 in double overtime. But they're 4-0. I mean, they found a way to overcome mistakes, and they beat Boston College and they beat Vanderbilt. But there is a lot to work on there. Eli Drinkwitz is going to come on the show today at 11:45 from Columbia. He will call in, and we will talk about it. I mentioned Mozeliak. So here's the full lineup. It's Ollie Marmol at 10:15. He's going to be with us in about 7 minutes, as he always is. This will be his second-to-last Sunday visit of the season. We'll have one more next Sunday before the Cardinals visit the San Francisco Giants. Then at 10:30, Gibson Jimerson. You talk about a guy who has to be excited for a college basketball season. He's back for another year with SLU, and he has a fun offense to work with. Josh Schertz's Indiana State offense, that five-out motion offense with Robbie Avila as the hub, finding cutters, finding open shooters, and Gibson is the best three-point shooter SLU's ever had. And he will have a fun year, I think. Well, I want to get the perspective from him, what SLU practice looks like and what this team could look like in 2024-25. Gibson Jimerson at 10:30. Bernie Miklas back with us at 10:45 today. He will join us live to discuss the Cardinals, Mizzou, and other topics. That's on the way. 11:05, a very special in-studio visit from Julius Hunter. Julius yesterday threw out the first pitch at the ballpark, and it was really a neat moment for him. He grew up in St. Louis. He was a longtime news anchor at KMOV. He is a legendary figure in the local television market here. He also received Friday night at the Landmarks Association Gala the Lifetime Achievement Award for his contributions to preserving St. Louis's historic architecture and culture. That ceremony was held at La Verona on the Hill. And Julius also had a bucket list item last night. He always wanted to read the disclaimer on the Cardinals broadcast. You know, this copyrighted telecast is a... this copyrighted broadcast. So he did the radio one last night on our broadcast, which I thought was cool. So we'll have him in to talk baseball and life. And then at 11:30, John Mozeliak. 11:45, Eli Drinkwitz. We're not going to talk to Lutz today. His team did win 2-1 last night against San Jose, but I offered a Sunday off for Lutz. That's a late game, late travel, early morning turnaround. So we'll have Lutz on later this week on Total Information AM. No Blues guests today. I know that hockey fans want to hear that, but they have a practice today They have a game today as well. So the staff, everybody is really stretched thin today. They always get that 10:45 if they want it. But today is a difficult day for them to do a live interview on sports on a Sunday morning. They lost 2-1 last night at Dallas in their first preseason game. They're going to play Utah tonight in Des Moines. So Iowa fans are trying to, let's get some Iowa fans on board with the Blues. They've played out in Kansas City. They play up in Des Moines. Get some regional heartland of hockey Blues action going here around this area. So they're going to play at Wells Fargo Arena tonight. The Blues will, but you can see them at Centene right now. There's practice going on there. So the Blues are kind of all over the place today. So a lot to get to. Sports on a Sunday morning on KMOX. Again, my takeaways, good game for the Cardinals, even though it doesn't count anymore. It does count for those younger players and some other players to gain some confidence for 25. Don't know what this 25 roster is going to look like. That is going to be one of many intriguing storylines of this offseason. The Tigers got away with one. Now it's time to lock down bye week and Texas A&M 2 weeks away as the SEC schedule gets tougher. And the NFL, we have a game tonight, the Chiefs and the Falcons. Chiefs so far so good. They've passed two tests against two good teams, the Ravens and the Bengals. Now they go down to Atlanta and play the Falcons. They don't have running back Isaiah Pacheco, so we'll see what they end up doing with Perrine and with Carson Steele, the 21-year-old, former Ball State, former UCLA Bruin, will get the bulk of the carries, I would think. But, you know, this is always about what Patrick Mahomes can do through the air, and if Kansas City can do their job, they should be 3-0. But we'll have that game tonight on KMOX at 7:20. Big NFL Sunday. Week 3 is upon us. A lot to get to. Sports on a Sunday morning on KMOX. Ollie Marmol, Cardinals manager, comes up next.
Now the Manager's Chat, presented by Siteman Cancer Center. Siteman Cancer Center, national leaders in cancer.
The outfielders are shading this right-handed batter toward right. A swing and a miss, and that's a Redbird winner. Helsley strikes out the side, and the Cardinals beat the Guardians. Light up the night in downtown St. Louis. 6-5, the Redbirds over the Guardians.
John Rooney with the call last night on KMOX as the Cardinals get the win 6-5 over the Cleveland Guardians. Great final moments there from Ryan Helsley and crew. And joining us is the manager of the Cardinals, Oliver Marmol. Good morning, Ollie. Good win last night.
Morning. How we doing?
Doing well. Good crowd last night, too. I was in the house last night. Just a great energy in the house. I'm sure that warms your heart to see that support to finish out the year.
It does, man. And they were into the game. It was a good one. A lot of good things happened yesterday. Some good swings as well. Good to see Jordan do what he's doing right now. Ivan Herrera taking a big swing as well. And then, man, Helsley, lights out. I said it last night, a race to the closer, man. They got a good one. We have a really good one. And it was fun to see him out there with the one-run lead and punch out the side.
Yeah, absolutely. And I know it was a tough one for JoJo Romero, and things do happen throughout the course of a season. And then Kittredge and Liberatore, you know, to clean that thing up, as Kit has been doing all year. That guy set a franchise record for holds yesterday.
He's been incredible, man, and it's so important to have a guy like him to get you to Helsley. Him and JoJo, Kit and JoJo, have done a really nice job all year, man. We're at the tail end. They feel good. They feel healthy. Kittredge has been incredible. It happens, man. JoJo got beat yesterday. Three straight righties got him. But for Libby to come in, and he's continuing to just take just more leverage innings, man, and his overall presence and determination and conviction behind what he's doing has been fun to watch. It really has been.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, I think because the game was so tight, and everybody knows how many tight games you've been involved in this year, but the game was so tight, I think maybe what got overshadowed a little bit was the start from Miles Michaelis, because it was a quality start. It was one that has evaded him. He's had a lot of ups and downs this year, and he would tell you all about it. A quality start and a very good start for Miles, something to build on perhaps as he heads into the offseason.
No doubt about that, man. He lived on the edges. He was able to kind of expand when needed and get some softer contact on some chase pitches and pitcher advantage counts. He did a really nice job, man. He had a good mix. He used the fastball on both sides of the plate, but he just stayed out of the middle, out of the heart of the plate. And Homer got him, but outside of that, man, I thought he did a really nice job. I mean, we all know he pitches to contact. This lineup doesn't punch out a whole lot, man. They got a lot of gritty at bats. They put a lot of balls in play. And I felt like he did a really nice job.
And I know we all get excited about the home run from Ivan Herrera, and so should we, and so should he. It's a three-run shot. He hadn't hit a home run since April 10th. I know it's been a tough year, and all that is great. But how did he catch yesterday? He catches Miles Michaelis in that game. He overcomes the four-run inning and finishes it out for you. How is Herrera behind the plate?
He's getting much better. This has been a point of emphasis for Herrera all year, even in the offseason leading into spring training. Just his ability to slow the game down. And at this level, you have a lot of information, your ability to take all that in and use it when needed. Our staff isn't the easiest, man. You got a lot of veteran dudes that have a lot of pitches and a lot of different ways to get outs based on what they're feeling. And Miles fits into that. So for him to navigate that lineup, I think Ivan's doing a much better job when it comes to the game calling and just having a reason for why he's calling certain pitches. And at times it's not going to work out, but as long as there's a reason for, hey, here's what I'm thinking, here's what I was trying to set up, and I do feel like we're taking really good steps in that direction.
You know, I've been framing this all morning as the Cardinals, I know, are out of playoff contention. It's rare that they play games where they're not in contention, but it is what it is. But the season isn't over, and the season certainly has a lot on the line for those players, doesn't it? I mean, Herrera's trying to show you what he can do and for himself, but also this path that's open for Jordan Walker to show what he can do on a daily basis. You have to feel good. He has to feel great about everything finally coming to fruition for him, and he's so young, Ollie. There's a lot to come.
You're absolutely right. This is a great opportunity, and it's exciting. It's energizing to see this many young guys up here having an opportunity to show what they're capable of doing headed into next year. And Jordan's definitely one of those, man. I've spent about an hour with him early this morning, and just hearing him talk through where he's at physically, mentally, and just where he's at with his offense, but also his defense and the steps that he's taken in order to get better. There's a lot of room there for him to continue to show what he's capable of. This is a guy that, I mean, his ceiling, who knows what it is? It's high. And the more he's able to talk through it and create plans for how to get there, the quicker we're gonna reach that, man. But he's been good. He's been really good so far.
He seems like so wise for his age, and you know, open to ideas. And I know it's hard, but it is a long season. One of those things you learn. Mason Wynn, you know, we almost take for granted how durable he's been. 142 games at shortstop for him. That's a lot. That's a lot on the body, and he's learning, of course, how to manage it. Yeah, he looks good too. You got a lot of young players, Ollie. What do you see here? What is the vision for your team? Actually, let me ask you this first. What's the difference between how you feel about your team this year and last year? I recall last year at this time, it was, you know, you're trying to get to the finish line here, and I asked you around this time of year, what do you want for 2024? And you said, I want winning players. I just want players who want to win, something along those lines. How do you feel about your club right now compared to how you felt a year ago?
Not even close, man. That last year was terrible for a lot of reasons. Yes, the record, that's one thing. But you also weren't headed in a direction that gave any type of hope as to what's possible for the organization moving forward, right? So, like, there's times where you don't have the season you want, but you still feel good about where it's headed. This is one of those, right? Like, we have a lot of young guys. Did we have the season we wanted to? No. Do I feel like if we were more consistent as an offense, I mean, we've talked about the runners in scoring position. That's just part of it. But if we did some things better, we'd be in a different position. Yes. But when you look at this club and you're able to remove yourself emotionally from the win-loss column and just say, all right, where are we headed? There's a lot to be excited about for the future. And you got some young guys in Donovan, Furlson, Newport, JC, Walker. You go down that list, man, Mason, Herrera, Pajes, Yanni, Victor Scott. I mean, that's a lot of first or second year guys all bunched into one club, right? So when you look at where are we headed, what's possible for their organization when you look 1, 2, 3 years down the road, then there's a lot to be excited about. They're gonna take it in the chin from time to time. It's not going to look the way we want it to, but with young players, that's just part of it at times. But I do feel really good about the mentality of where our guys are and what's possible for them. And it's our job to create plans to get them there and kind of expedite that timetable a little bit.
I'll be curious to see what the rotation looks like and how these contracts are handled, obviously. And it's probably a better question for John Mozeliak here in a little bit. But
I would agree with you.
Yeah. But Sonny Gray going down opens an opportunity for Michael McGreevy to give you another start. He'll get to do that in Colorado.
It does. And here's the thing. Sonny's posted, and it just doesn't make sense to continue to push him through any type of soreness based on where we are with the standings. Could you? Absolutely. But is it the smartest thing? I have to say no. But it does open up a spot for McGreevy to take a couple starts and show what he's capable of doing at this level. He's been with us now for two outings, and they both look good, but it'll be good to see him prepare for an outing and know that he's going to take a couple starts here.
You will have Andre Palante on the hill. Here's another one who, what a season if you really think about it. And going back to that conversation that the two of you had, and he made his case, didn't he, that he thought that starting could work well for him. He, I think, kind of bet on himself. Seems like it worked out.
Yes. That one I'm excited about, man, because there's been a lot of work put into that one from Palante's standpoint. Different departments coming together and integrating in order to get the best out of Palante as well. And for him to go down to AAA and solely work on, there's times where you go down there and you just want to, you sulk for a little bit. And he did none of that, man. He went down there with a purpose. I need to work on my sinker. I need something to get righties out, and I need to be able to repeat this delivery enough to prove that it's possible. And that's all he worked on, and then came back up and proved that, hey, I'm already good at getting lefties out. I have this pitch now that neutralizes the righty, and if I can do that, I can give you some quality innings, and he's done exactly that. But I know I've talked about it quite a bit over the last week, but I can't speak enough to that pitching department, man. I feel like we're taking some really strong steps in the right direction with our young group, man. You look at that bullpen, and you're seeing guys have the best years of their careers based on just having some real clarity as to what makes them good and doubling down on that. And so when you look at the Libbys and Fernandez and JoJo's and you go down that list, man, there's a lot to be excited about with some of those young guys as well.
There'll be a lot of things to talk about as 2025 approaches. But let me ask you this. If you can describe your emotions about today, last game at Busch Stadium, and as we know, if you win the World Series, the roster changes over. Just like if you come up short, the roster will change over. It'll be the last time that you're all together in the home clubhouse at Busch Stadium. Are there emotions tied to that, or is this business today?
No, there are, man, because you always – it's fun playing at home, especially when you're playing good baseball and this place is packed and you're playing meaningful games. It's a fun place to play. So there's emotions in it being our last home game as a group. There's certain guys that know that, man, it's like Harp's in the lineup today. It'll be fun to watch him here at home. Who knows what next year holds for him. So there's certain aspects of this that I'm looking forward to for sure.
I look forward to seeing what happens today. I always look forward to these conversations. We'll have another one next Sunday. We'll catch up with you a little bit later. I know we'll hear you on the pregame show as well. Thanks for what you do for us. So we appreciate it. We'll catch up with you soon.
You got it, brother.
Cardinals manager Oliver Marmol with us, 10:28 on Sports on a Sunday morning. Cardinals play at 1:15 today against the Cleveland Guardians, who clinched the AL Central yesterday after the Royals lost to the Giants 9-0. So they had a little celebration in their clubhouse last night. I actually walked by there last night on my way out after doing the postgame show. I could hear the music still thumping in there. So Guardians are good. They're really good. I mean, I think the Yankees are certainly the team everyone's going to be watching to come out of the American League, but I think Guardians might be the best team in the American League. The Astros obviously have been the Yankees' kryptonite, and there are other teams that could make some noise as well. This thing is not even settled yet in the American League, and in the National League, who knows? Now, the Padres are still chasing down the Dodgers. They're not done yet. They look good. The Dodgers obviously are a power, and I think baseball would benefit from a Yankees-Dodgers World Series with those two big markets and all those superstar players, but it always seems to be knocked out, doesn't it? The Diamondbacks crashing the World Series last year, something strange always happens, so buckle up for that. When we come back, Gibson Jimerson, Billiken's guard with us, Bernie Miklas at 10:45, Julius Hunter at 11:05, John Mozeliak 11:30, Eli Drinkwitz 11:45. Sports on a Sunday morning on KMOX, sponsored by Graybar.
Waltz is in and Quinn gets a breather as Weirwood killed his dribble, has a man in the corner. Jimerson, quick pop out of the corner, bang!
Another one.
Ninth straight.
When you think about businesses that are selling through the roof like Aloe, Allbirds, or Skims, sure, you think about a great product, a cool brand, and brilliant marketing. But an often overlooked secret is actually the businesses behind the business, making selling and for shoppers buying simple. For millions of businesses, that business is Shopify. Nobody does selling better than Shopify, home of the number one checkout on the planet and the not-so-secret secret with Shop Pay that boosts conversions up to 50%, meaning way less carts going abandoned and way more sales going. So if you're into growing your business, your commerce platform better be ready to sell whenever your customers are scrolling or strolling on the web, in your store, in their feed, and everywhere in between. Upgrade your business and get the same checkout experience as business powerhouses like Aloe, Allbirds, and Skims. Sign up for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odysseypodcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odysseypodcast to upgrade your selling today. shopify.com/odysseypodcast.
Sometimes in football, you need just a little more for that first down. You need to be pushing the pile. And on our new podcast, we'll give you that extra effort.
I'm Mike Renner, a longtime NFL analyst who helped develop player evaluation systems that every NFL team uses to this day.
And I'm Kyle Long, former All-Pro offensive lineman in the NFL who knows a thing or two about getting people moving.
You'll get expertise from inside the trenches and behind the tape for four episodes every week. So make sure you download and subscribe to the Pushing the Pile podcast on the Odyssey app.
Nine straight.
Get it, Bob Gibson. Gibson Jimerson.
I get it. Gibby. Gibson Jimerson has made more three-pointers than anybody in Billiken history tonight.
Wow.
He moved past Irwin Claggett as he hit his fourth. They were tied. Gibson's 4 of 6 from beyond the arc. He now has 297 three-pointers made.
Big night for our Billiken veterans. Tonight.
Absolutely. Gibson Jimerson, the all-time three-point shooter in SLU history, and joins us now on Sports on a Sunday Morning live at 10:34. Good morning, Gibson. How are you?
I'm doing well, man. How are you?
Doing great. Fun to hear those highlights, isn't it? As Bob Ramsey and Earl Austin Jr. described the action, and you are back again.
Yes, sir. Yeah, that was great. I appreciate that. No, I'm excited. Yeah, I couldn't be more excited to be back.
And happy birthday. A big birthday for you yesterday.
Yeah. It was birthday yesterday, so got to relax a little bit. We had an off day, so got to kind of chill and, you know, just kind of relax. And, it was fun. It was really fun.
That's good. It's been busy, hasn't it? What has practice been like as Josh Schertz brings his new style of offense to St. Louis University?
Yeah, it's been great. It's been a good change. You know, again, obviously being there for 5 years, going into my last year, you know, I was kind of used to it, kind of knew what the system was. Everything was, you know, but now it's different, but in a good way, I like to say. You know, we're getting used to each other as a team, and you know, kind of building that camaraderie on the court and off the court. And you know, Josh is he's a great coach, and I've really enjoyed playing for him. Super genuine guy, loves to work. You know, we work every day, and you know, we're putting in that system now and kind of, you know, still establishing it, but we're getting there. But, you know, I'm really excited. It's going to be a fun style of basketball for us. People are going to definitely want to watch us play.
I agree. Having watched him at Indiana State for the last couple of years and done a number of his games, that style of offense, which I know, I mean, as a girls basketball coach, I coach eighth graders, Gibson. I've tried to replicate the five out I watch NBA teams kind of run some similar styles, and I know he takes some pages from them, and they talk to him. It's interesting. The way I would describe it, and you would probably follow it better than me, you have the freedom to cut, to move, to get open. It does incorporate the three-point shot. Robbie Avila's kind of, you know, as a big man, runs point in some ways, kind of like a hub around it to get you all open and to find cutters. It's fascinating, isn't it?
Yeah, yeah, and I'd say, like, too, you know, he talks about having a lot of freedom, and I think, you know, a lot of coaches, they give a lot of freedom, but that can be debilitating at times. You know, with him, it's freedom within sort of your function, within the framework of the team, and, you know, defining what you do best and having you do that most of the time, you know, limiting your weaknesses. But you're right, like, definitely space and pace, you know, playing super fast, shooting a lot of threes, generating a lot of layups. Like, people think, you know, getting threes is you know, just hunting threes. Actually, really, if you can get a lot of layups, that causes the defense to collapse, and that's where you get those wide-open kick-out threes. So, you know, for someone like me, I'm super excited to be able to, you know, kind of play in that system, you know, definitely show my strength. You know, Robbie's been great, Isaiah. You know, everybody's, you know, bought in, and yeah, it's definitely going to be, it's going to be exciting, fast paced style of basketball.
Robbie's a good guy. We had him here in studio recently, spending some time with us, and what a leader. And I think that he has really joined forces with you, it sounds like, and Isaiah, as three players who can help carry this team. There will be others, though. It seems like there's some good depth on this basketball team, and we'll see where that all goes. But a big team with the ability to shoot the basketball, but really I think some size is kind of exciting, isn't it?
Yeah, yeah, we got a lot of guys that are kind of in that, and obviously Robbie's big, but we got a lot of guys in the, you know, 6'4 to like 6'8 range. Kellen, AJ, you know, myself, Larry, big guards, Kalu as well, like guys with wingspan that can be disruptive on the defensive end. You know, definitely help protect the basket. But yeah, we got a lot of guys that are versatile, that work well in the offense and the defense, which I'm excited about. You know, be able to switch a lot and, you know, switch up our defenses, which, you know, is you know, what you need to be able to kind of throw the other team off. But yeah, our size is awesome. Got a lot of, you know, great athletes, and we got a good mix of size and athleticism and talent as well. So yeah, it's going
to
be fun.
I went to your first practice and sat next to Earl Austin Jr. We were sitting there watching it, and it was neat to see that collection of talent. The one that I did not get to see play, I saw him play plenty in college, was Isaiah Swope, who was hurt at that time. He's back, though, isn't he? How do you describe him as a player?
Man, yeah, he's awesome. I think he might be the quickest player I've ever played against or with. He is very fast, elite shooter, you know, off the bounce, catch and shoot. You know, will be fun to play next to him in that regard, but, you know, has a great handle, super fast, can get to the basket, really disruptive on defense, gets under the ball, you know, just kind of gets over under every ball screen. But yeah, he's awesome, man. He's a good leader. I've enjoyed being around him, and yeah, he's going to give us kind of a different dynamic on the team. I think, you know, will be obviously beneficial to me and Robbie and everybody else. But yeah, he's big time. He's big time.
This is Gibson Jemerson, the 6'5 guard, redshirt senior with St. Louis University, coming back for one more year. And I know you had a great relationship with Travis Ford as well. And when I used to visit with him on these Sunday mornings, he really raved about your improvement defensively, but he was so proud of you academically. I remember the day that you graduated, and now you get to sport that MBA. The pride that your coach had in you and the people around you, I know that that has been one of your other great accomplishments at St. Louis University.
Yeah, no, and again, you know, it's funny, like, you come to college and everybody wants to talk about the basketball part, and rightfully so. Again, that's one of the main, but, you know, also there's the academic part, and for me that was really important, and I valued that. You know, it was unique that I could, you know, graduate early undergrad and then kind of finish my master's in a year, and kind of have this year to focus a little bit more on basketball. But, you know, it was something I really wanted to do, and you know, a lot of guys, they talk about it like they want to get through college so quickly and kind of get, but I, you know, I've kind of been the opposite. I've wanted to kind of take my time, enjoy it, because, you know, it's hard to replicate this time in your life, and, you know, it's very unique, and for me, just kind of taking my time, enjoying it, have fun, you know, get to learn both on the court and off the court, and, you know, I was able to take advantage of that, which is, you know, something that I really wanted to do.
And to be around your fellow students, like you said, I like the way you put that. You know, we don't get to do that over. You know, all those college years are so much fun, and wear St. Louis on your chest. But to be around those students, what you've been in that place when it's hopping, I know that's still the dream, to get SLU back to where it wants to be, winning an A-10 title. But when those students are in there and that band is going, and that place is packed. You got around 10,000 rocking and rolling. It is fun, isn't it?
It's electric, man. Yeah, we've had some great games over the years, and you know, I think this year will be no different. Like we'll pack the place out, and you know, especially those rivalry games in conference. But yeah, man, it's hard to hear in there. It's loud, especially you know when you make threes and dunks and all that. I think it's gonna be exciting. You know, we can definitely, you know, we can use all the support we can get, but it's going to be fun. Yeah, yeah, we'll definitely have students in there, and it's going to be loud, and it's going to be a hard place to play for sure.
And finally, just looking ahead at what you have to come, what are these next few weeks look like? I know you're going to have some preseason games in October, and then it gets going here. How often, you mentioned you had a nice little breather yesterday. How often are you practicing, and what does this look like as you combine everything together in these last few weeks?
Yeah, we've been pretty consistent. We go about 5 days a week, usually get a day off in the middle of the week and one day on the weekend. So we've been practicing, you know, 5 days out of the 7 days, and that'll be pretty consistent up until we start playing. Next Friday, we have our little Billiken night, so we'll do like a little scrimmage and introduce the teams, everybody, and so that'll be pretty fun, kind of a first, you know, public appearance for everybody. Then we'll have our two kind of preseason games, exhibition games, and then we'll get started. But yeah, you know, we're consistent right now. These are kind of those times where you're putting everything in, you're kind of solidifying, you know, what everybody's role looks like, and putting in plays and underneath out of bounds and prep and all that stuff. So, you know, we're getting through that, you know, working together, working hard, building that camaraderie on the court and off the court. But yeah, you know, pretty consistent with our practicing. Got the thing next Friday, and then, you know, outside competition's pretty close. So it's definitely gone by fast for sure, but, you know, couldn't be more excited for it.
Gibson Jimerson came in as a freshman in the 2019-2020 season, and here we are ready for 2024-25, and it will be a lot of fun to hear your name called again at Chaffetz Arena. It's good to have you back. We'll have all the games right here on KMOX, and I look forward to it, Gibson. Thank you so much for the time today.
Of course, man. I appreciate you having me on. I had a blast. Thank you.
You bet. And happy birthday to Gibson Jimerson. Birthday yesterday. It's going to be a fun team, folks. And I would not get too hung up on what the schedule looks like. You're coming to see the Billikens, and then we'll see. I think a lot of times some of the non-conference opponents that they try to schedule aren't really sure what to make of the Billikens. When one, you know, how good are they? Is it worth us to try to knock them off? Will that help us? Or are they too good? And are we subject to getting our butts handed to us, you know, a lot of times? And Gibson Jimerson, Isaiah Swope, Robbie Avila, I think you can count on those three starting for SLU. And then beyond that, we'll see who makes that rotation. Josh Schertz tends to play seven guys, maybe eight, but usually about seven, and really rides those starters. So it's going to be fun to see what they can pile up this year and get some wins going and get to back to the NCAA tournament. We're going to take a break. When we come back, Bernie Miklas joins us right here on KMOX.
Sports on a Sunday morning.
Goldschmidt swings and he hits a drive. He hits a slammer.
Graybar, your distributor for electrical and datacom needs.
Billikens win! Billikens win!
Once again, from the Stifel Financial Sports Studio, Tom Ackerman.
And we welcome in Bernie Miklas for the final segment of this hour. Good morning, Bernie.
Hey, Tom. Good to be with you again, my friend.
Always good to be with you. Let's start with Mizzou. I mean, did they save their season last night? Goodness gracious. Finally figured out a way to beat Vanderbilt. You got to beat Vanderbilt, don't you?
Yeah, Vanderbilt's better. You know, I want to give them some credit. And they have a very experienced defense. And I think that experience showed, because the Mizzou offense malfunctioned way too often yesterday. I mean, they were Mizzou crossed their own 40 11 times in that game and came away with 20 points. I mean, you got to do a lot better than that. So that's a concern. And I think the Tigers, there's two ways to look at it. The Tigers are very fortunate to be sitting here 4-0, because they certainly could have lost the game yesterday. Maybe you could say they even should have lost the game yesterday. And they had a relatively close call from Boston College. But they survived those two, except now that they go to the bye week, I think we can all agree with part two, which is they clearly need to be better, especially on offense, and they need to clean up the penalties and the blown assignments and pass coverage on defense. We know that there is a higher level that this team can get to in terms of performance, especially on the offensive side of the ball. So this will be a really important bye week. They can really put it to good use, because, as we all know, the schedule gets very, very difficult after that, relatively speaking.
Absolutely. They go to Texas A&M in 2 weeks and later a visit to Tuscaloosa, not to mention Oklahoma coming to Columbia. Those are three big games. No, you're right. You can look at it one of two ways, and it's actually both, that they should be way better than they are, but maybe they're good enough to get away with things. And now it's time to lock it down. How do you view the Cardinals as we head into 2025, or should I say finish up 2024? How do you look at this team here in these last week?
I'm sorry, Tommy. Yeah, first of all, they're a better team, but there's no consolation prizes. I mean, I would hope after 71 and 91 last season that you would be a better team. You know, I mean, that's not really saying too much, but they are better. Listen, I think we can identify a lot of reasons, but I think the number one thing that jumps out at me, when you just look at basic stats, I'm not getting too fancy here. You know, the Cardinals, as going into today, are 25th in the majors, 25 out of 30 in runs per game. If you look at how many runs they allowed this season, it was below average, but it wasn't awful. And I'm not saying it's fine, it's good to be below average. I'm not saying that. You know, I think they were 18th, 19th in runs allowed per game. And you can win with that if you have a good offense. You can win more games with that. Last year, it was a landslide. I mean, they had no chance because of their pitching was so awful all season long. This pitching staff at least gave them a chance to win more games than they did, especially the bullpen, which has been outstanding pretty much all year. They just couldn't muster enough runs. They had way too many games of scoring three runs or less, two runs or less. And needless to say, those games, and there were a lot of them, they had a horrendous record in. So I think offense cost them any shot they had to make the playoffs or to be right there at the end in postseason contention.
I'll be very curious to see how they present this team to their fan base, meaning what do they do from the top down? If John Mozeliak and Ollie Marmol are still running this team, to be honest, that is going to turn some people off, even if they are under contract and retain their jobs, not to mention the staff working with Ollie. I think that fans are going to anticipate not only change on the roster, but change within the organization. I'll be curious to see how they handle that and present that to their base. That's very important.
Tom, I think this is the most important offseason the Cardinals have had since after the 1995 season going into 96. That's when Bill DeWitt and his partners took over and purchased the team. That's when Walt Jocketty, who had only been there a short while, Walt Jocketty went out and recruited Tony La Russa, and Bill DeWitt said, hey, you do whatever it takes. We really want La Russa. They made a bunch of changes. They upgraded the roster. They spent money. And they win a division title. They go from a really, really bad team in the early 90s, and they win the division title first year La Russa's here, first year DeWitt is the owner. So that transition back in early 1996, that transformed the franchise. It transformed the franchise dramatically. They need something very similar. Now, I'm not saying they can do the exact type of thing, but I'm talking about substantial changes that will alter the course, the direction of the franchise, which, as we know, is in a bad trajectory right now. One of the moves already began when Gary LaRocque decided to retire as the director of player development. So there are going to be big changes on that side. But I'm with you, and I've been kind of hollering about it. They can't tweak this. You know, this isn't something that's like, well, we're going to do this, then we're going to do a little bit of that, a little bit of this, coat of paint here. You know, we'll fix some of the tiles on the roof there. You know, they can't do that. This has got to be a really big renovation. And to your point, I hear from fans. I interact constantly. And on my YouTube channel, I mean, there's a lot of intelligent discussion about this. And I am here to tell you based on what I've been told by fans, they want big changes. And frankly, they want someone to take over the baseball operation. You know, I don't like to sit here and say, you know, fire this guy, fire that guy. And listen, John Mozeliak's got a contract. He'll be here through 2025 anyway. But I think nothing short of something like that, frankly, I think fans, there's still going to be a lot of fan unrest, which is not good for the franchise.
Yeah, I think that's interesting. And then when it comes to personnel, players themselves, you need a star. You need stars to sell. And I think there are some coming. Mason Wynn is one. Jordan Walker can be. And there are others on the rise. But, you know, Ronald Acuna doesn't just pop up out of nowhere. You have to develop those players. You know, going out and getting Shohei Ohtani isn't happening. You know, they don't have that ability. So they're caught in a bit of a spot there. They need some star power, no doubt about it. And their two big stars, Nolan Arenado and Paul Goldschmidt, are on the backside of their careers, unfortunately. So they're in an interesting situation there, too.
Yeah, and that's the number one thing. We're getting back to what I said at the beginning about where did the Cardinals go wrong. Listen, we know that Arenado and Goldschmidt, of course, 2022, they were, you know, Goldie won the MVP, Arenado third. They had incredible seasons. They both kind of went down last year offensively, but the numbers were still respectable. But you said, oh, where's this leading to? And then they really went down this year. There's no ways to get around it. In some ways, both of them had their worst career in the big leagues, at least since they broke into the big leagues as like part-time players or whatever. But when that happens, your two cornerstones, you know, they basically hit the aging curve, and there's no coming back from that. And then the other thing, the two guys that you were counting on is going to be like, all right, what's next? Who's next? Who are our next stars? I think most people would say, well, it's going to be Walker and it's going to be Gorman. And those two guys just kind of went off the cliff this year. And there's no way to have a great offense when those four things happen, Goldie, Arenado, Walker, and Gorman. I still think Walker can be a star. I think Gorman can still be a star. I don't know why they can't fix hitters at the major league level. And it's also up to the hitters to have, you know, a lot of control or a lot of input on making changes themselves and knowing what they have to do. But we've seen a pattern here that's very, very disturbing. And so you ask me, okay, what are they going to do for stars? I'm just sort of keeping it to what they have now. Unless this trend changes where they have young hitters that they're very excited about and we've seen them do well. And then all of a sudden it's like, what happened there? And why can't we fix them on the major league level? I think that is one answer that has to be supplied this offseason because they cannot continue to do this. You keep having really good young players that you draft high and they hit well and then they stop hitting and then no one at the major league level can get them right. That's going to bring your product down. That's going to bring your offense down in a severely damaging way. They just can't continue to do this.
Always great to hear from you. Thank you for breaking this down. I love these Sunday mornings with you, pal.
You got it, man. Looking forward to next week already, brother.
Absolutely. Subscribe to his YouTube page, Bernie Miklas, with us on KMOX when we come back after the news. Julius Hunter's in the house. Can't wait to visit with him. Also, John Mozeliak and Eli Drinkwitz next hour.
Sometimes in football, you need just a little more for that first down. You need to be pushing the pile. And on our new podcast, we'll give you that extra effort.
I'm Mike Renner, a longtime NFL analyst who helped develop player evaluation systems that every NFL team uses to this day.
And I'm Kyle Long, former All-Pro offensive lineman in the NFL who knows a thing or two about getting people moving.
You'll get expertise from inside the trenches and behind the tape for four episodes every week. So make sure you download and subscribe to the Pushing the Pile podcast on the Odyssey app.